Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports-ad-free. That's amazon.com/sports-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Campionato di calcio italiano.
Hello and welcome to the latest Forza Italian Football Podcast. As ever, I am your host Connor Clancy, and Kev, you're with me again. There's no Vito this week. It's just the two of us.
I know, very personal. Yeah, nice to be here, Connor.
It is nice and intimate, right? But that man Kev does have a full name. It's Kevin Pogorzelski, or another pronunciation that neither of us can quite master. But Kev, this was a big weekend in Serie A. It was a big weekend for us, and I'm going to be selfish to start the podcast off, because until this weekend, our record of games attended this season was 7. This weekend, we had riders at 8 of the 10 Serie A games to take place, which was pretty impressive. We thought we were going to be able to get to all 10 until early next week, last week, when some things just fell out of place, unfortunately, but we're targeting the week when we can get to all 10, and it's going to be a joyous occasion. But Kev, it's good to have you here with me, because I'm tired, so you're going to have to speak, because I was all over the place. But where shall we start? I guess we should start, for no reason other than to get out of the way, with Juve 4, Udinese 1. I say Juventus, but it wasn't really Juventus, was it? It was more like a collection of players who have been out on loan at other places, but were still owned by Juventus, and you forgot about them. And they are now their reserve team. So the reserves beat Udinese 4-1. And what's the point? I don't understand.
No, it was the game itself was very much a non-event, because of probably, I think I counted 3 players that I would maybe expect to start against Atletico on Tuesday night, or today. Where am I?
I don't know.
So the game itself was a bit of a non-event, but it did raise the question as to why they were even playing on a Friday night. I think I first remember this happening, I think Ligue 1 in France may have set this trend about 10 years ago with that very strong Lyon side that won 7 or 8 back-to-back titles, and they'd play games on Friday nights when Lyon had a Champions League game. But with Juventus 16 points ahead at that point on Friday and able to rest the number of players that they rested, you just wonder why the league even allowed them. Well, probably, I imagine the league scheduled it to happen like that in a way of helping them.
It's quite strange, isn't it? Because even if Juve weren't 16 points ahead, as you said, you look at the team, there's what, 3 players who will play in midweek. They didn't need to play this game so early, because it's not the same set of players who will play. But it's a sensitive one, I guess, because if they are changing games for everyone, the league can't then determine, oh, well, you guys are strong enough to deal with it, so you can play on the Saturday and we'll let everyone else in the Champions League play their games on the Friday. But it did just seem a little bit odd, because look, you see, Moise Kean and Leonardo Spinazzola and who else played? But they're not going to, even Martin Caceres played, Andrea Barzagli played, they're not going to play. So it's a strange one. And of course, Udinese being Udinese, couldn't make anything of a quite favourable situation, considering.
You could have even made the argument that Allegri could have used it to actually prepare for Atletico. You know, if he put a strong side out, arguably Udinese would have defended a little bit deeper, which I kind of expect Atletico to do on Tuesday night. And they would have taken it easy, let's face it. If the players that were going to play on Tuesday were playing on Friday night, they would have taken it a little bit easy, but trying to work their way through a packed defence, which would be great preparation for their Champions League tie.
Yeah, for sure. It is strange. They might have even done it the other way around. If they played with 8 first-team players, rested a couple, put in the likes of Ken, right? He's hungry, plays well whenever he plays now at Juve this season because he knows that he's not going to have many opportunities. But if he played with the majority of their first team, they'd still have taken care of Udinese quite handily. They wouldn't have had to exert themselves too much. And yeah, it would have been nice preparation for what's going to be a really, really difficult game. This will be a difficult game for them if Juve have to win just 1-0. Juve are 2-0 behind coming into this, so it's going to be a tricky situation for them. But they're already going big. As we saw, Massimiliano Allegri, basically the day after the Atletico Madrid loss, spoke about how they had 20 days to prepare for the second leg, almost writing off the Serie A games that fell in between, one of them being against Napoli. And then they put out this video to get people's blood pumping, Kev. It was strange.
I just hated it. I don't follow their social media streams necessarily, but yeah, because so many people retweet them and they come past me. But if I've got one gripe with the whole video, it's in English.
I know.
They've gotten 2 English actors. There is something very sad about a club that's in Italy that then needs to make their social media streams English, because they're trying to hit that worldwide audience. You know, even the hashtag get ready is in English. You know, we are not all imbeciles. put it in Italian and let us read subtitles.
Or just do the English tweet on your English account.
Yes, I've got multiple language accounts.
Yeah, I really don't understand it. Your first 3 words, I hated it, sum up my feelings towards the whole thing. And I think a lot of people's feelings, even many Juventus fans, were probably quite embarrassed.
Not to defend Juventus, but there are a lot of things I hate about modern football. But this whole social media, you know, this PR game that all these clubs play, you know, it's, you're not family, you're not fans, you're family, all this just makes my blood boil.
Yeah, and then, I don't know, Juventus are just quite a frustrating case, because we had the whole changing crest thing recently, and it was to make themselves a global lifestyle brand, not a football club. And this probably just fits in with that. To be a lifestyle brand, you have to appeal all around the world. English is the most widely spoken language.
But I think the fans are getting bored of it.
Well, you would, wouldn't you? It would drive you insane.
Fans losing interest. You know, I've seen reports. Well, actually, I saw reports about the Curva Sud complaining about the ticket prices, and they are ridiculously high at Juve. And at the same time, I saw an article that went out. It might have been a couple of months ago about them. They can, if they want to, the way the stadium's been built, add another 20,000 or so, or just under, to make it 60,000. You know, but the whole idea of them getting a 42,000 seat stadium was that it was filled and it wasn't empty like the old Alpi used to be. And now you've just got empty seats in that Udinese game, because I think that the league's over. You know, what are they playing for?
But this is it. And I don't want it to seem like we're just bashing them, right? But because they made such a song and dance about making the smaller stadium so that with filler and the atmosphere will be amazing and people go on about how great it is, that stadium looks pathetic when it's not full. And it's never full. For big games, yeah, but 90% of the time, that stadium just looks bad. And with the ultras not being happy with the club at the moment, it makes for a really joyless occasion to watch Juventus. I'm quite glad, actually, that Dolphins game's there, because
they've added pressure on themselves to win the Champions League this year. They brought in Ronaldo, you know, almost to that will almost justify the high ticket prices that the fans pay, you know, and then they're likely to go out. Let's face it, you know, I don't give them much hope. It's probably 60-40 if I'm being generous in Atletico's favour to go through. So if they go out in the last 16, the league's already won, which is, you know, been a bit of a cakewalk. You know, how can they justify the prices that they're charging the fans? And, you know, when everybody knows what huge salary Ronaldo came in on this year.
Yeah, but they can't. And this is what we were saying. If they don't win the Champions League, their season hasn't been a success. They've just done the least they were expected to do before the season started. And Allegri was speaking about this in the week, and he was furious with the idea that their season could be a failure if they won Serie A. And winning Serie A is an achievement for normal clubs. Juventus aren't that anymore. They are a team who wins Serie A, and that is the minimum expectation. So,
I wouldn't blame Allegri for that, though.
For
all this pressure being heaped on the Champions League as such. You know, he's got them to two finals. You know, I don't think he can ever be deemed a failure if he doesn't pick it up while he's there, because at the end of the day, it is a knockout competition. And when you get through, it's kind of luck of the draw. It's got, you know, you had the penalty decision last year against Real Madrid. It's fine margins cup competitions.
I do agree with that. I don't think you could blame Allegri for them not winning the Champions League, but if they go out this season, you could certainly hold him accountable for the mistakes he made in the first leg against Atletico. The way he set that team up then just didn't seem right at the time, and it proved to be. But as things stand, they're on to win Serie A as early as April 13th, away to Spal, which that's if what they win all their games and everyone else does too. But you could see it happening before that, because when Napoli drew at Sassuolo, I was there for that one, and they just... Ancelotti made a lot of changes, but Napoli were never really on it. They showed in bursts that they were able to attack really quickly and impressively and effectively, but those bursts were too sporadic. There was no consistency to their play. In truth, Sassuolo dominated them. And you put it to me beforehand, have Napoli just completely given up on Serie A?
I would say they have, and I think... I was about to say that defeat against Juventus crushed their morale, but I don't know if any of them really expected to win. I think they just saw it as, let's not make this an embarrassment this season. They got so close last year, and if they'd beaten Juventus, it would have been 13 points. They could have probably dug in for the rest of the season and, you know, and got a little bit close and maybe finished with Juve's possible drop-off if they did proceed through the Champions League. You know, get within... a reasonable margin again, but now it's over for them, really, and they've got the Europa League to focus on, which I do look, you know, watching them play last Thursday, I think they are actually going to have a good crack at that.
Yeah, well, they're 3-0 up against Red Bull from the first leg, obviously, and you would expect them to go through. You'd expect them to score out there as well, which would make Red Bull's task uphill. But this is what made it a little bit more frustrating for me, that Napoli didn't quite show up. That tie is more done than Juve's tie is, so I don't see why Napoli couldn't have gone for it a little bit more, because we all thought that the top three was done and dusted as Juve, Napoli, Inter. Milan have shown that that's quite not the case, and Milan could now close in on Napoli and finish second if Napoli keep dropping off like this, but I don't know. It's hard to get excited about anything there, especially when it looks like the clubs themselves just don't care.
I think Napoli had two games at home, though, didn't they? You know, the Red Bull, the Salzburg game was at home, and the game against Juve was at home. I think there's a lot of pressure from that crowd at times. You know, I was there for the Champions League tie against Liverpool earlier in the season, and it's got to be difficult to play under. And then when you go away to play at Sassuolo, it must feel a little bit like a holiday. And I think it can then mean that you have that downing of tools, so to speak. You know, just taking it a little bit easier.
It's funny that you say it must be like a holiday, because it actually did feel like a preseason game where a big club have gone somewhere in Italy where they have some fans and they're just putting on a bit of a show for them. Because from before the game, the Napoli fans outnumbered the Sassuolo fans at the Mapei Stadium, because there are Napolitani everywhere in Italy, and Sassuolo are a tiny, tiny team who don't even play in their own town. So Sassuolo never fill the Mapei, never even fill the end that the ultras occupy. And there was a really funny moment early in the game where Sassuolo must have had about 20 ultras there, and they started to sing a song. And there was a family, like three kids, a mum and a dad of Napoli fans sitting in front of the press area. And they stood up and started whistling, and it drowned out the ultras singing, and the ultras then stopped, and then the Napoli fans started singing again. But it had a really weird atmosphere, because when the teams came out to warm up, Napoli got a really big reception because their fans were there early. Not just in the end either, all around the place. And when Sassuolo scored, it was, I'd say, 40% of the stadium were celebrating, 60 stayed sitting. So it did kind of have that feel, which going to the Mapei Stadium is always a strange experience for traveling sides. And maybe it did just feel like that. And maybe they just allowed themselves to get switched off when they probably shouldn't have. But I don't know. It seems strange. Adam Unas and Simone Verdi. Verdi, can we speak about him briefly? Because he had a couple of chances. He should have scored. And he's not doing himself any favours, because there was one in particular where Fautsi Gulam found him. And I don't know why, but Verdi just decided to put his foot through it. And he smashed it way, way over the crossbar. And as you see Ken do at Juve, he takes his chances, even though he knows he's probably not going to get in the first team. Verdi has to make more of these opportunities.
Yeah, it was a move that frustrated me in the summer. Because I thought, you're not going to get past Milik. The next probable striker is Mertens. They had enough in attacking areas, Napoli. And you know, I hate to see those players that are doing so well because they're playing every week. They've got that match sharpness. They're maybe not snatching at the shots like you described there. And then they make that move, and then it's meh. You know, they go out with a kind of a whimper until they then. They crop up 2-3 years later, that little bit older, you know, and having a sort of almost start over again as he was at Bologna last year.
See, I criticised them for not making the move when he turned it down in January. And I thought, well, this was just the perfect opportunity for him to go, because Napoli's team had started to show some cracks. People were saying rotations need to happen, particularly in the front three. Verdi had the opportunity to go there and compete for the title, and he didn't do it. And to me, that said a lot, that he didn't quite back himself to push it, yeah, to push himself at the highest level. He thought that he was resigned to the fact that he'd go to Napoli and just do nothing. So then when he made the move in the summer, it was doubly strange, because having previously said no when you could have gone and competed for a title, you're now going to the same situation with the same set of players, and suddenly you fancy yourself to get in.
I think it was that lack of move in the summer in the winter window that made the move in the summer so strange, because that's where we had more time to assess where am I going to get game time, you know, where is my career going to progress. You know, he'd broken into the Italian side playing at Bologna, and yeah, it was a strange one.
It really was. There were obviously the rumours when he turned down Napoli in the winter that, oh, he's turned them down because Juve have agreed to sign him in the summer. And obviously that didn't happen. So then for him to rock up at Napoli, I don't know, it's a strange one. And I don't know what to think of Simone Verdi anymore. I always thought he was slightly overrated, but a bit of a talent. Now I don't know what he is anymore. And he probably does need to go somewhere else again. because
back just, to Bologna.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't wish that on anyone. But to be fair to Bologna, I won't be mean about them this week because I had a lovely time there, and we'll get to that. We will get to that. But Kev, there's a big game coming up this weekend, which is the Milan Derby, and Milan warmed up for it with the good results, even if not the best performance. They beat Chievo 2-1 in Verona. We had Dov there, but we're not going to talk to him as far as I'm aware. Christoph Piontek scored again. What a surprise. But what was actually somewhat shocking is that Lucas Biglia played and he scored a stunning goal.
Yeah, it was... I kind of, because Paqueta had won the free kick, I kind of expected him to allow him to step up and have a go. But it really... Yeah, I don't recall ever seeing Biglia strike a free kick, let alone one as accurately as he did there. It was almost as if it was grazing both crossbar and post as it sort of nestled its way into that corner.
Well, this is... I'm not sure if he took free kicks, but I remember kind of falling in love with him when he was at Lazio because I love that type of player who sits deep, smashes people, and is technically excellent as well. And this is one thing that was often overlooked with him was his technical ability, and he really showed that. And obviously, he's not had the easiest of times at Milan lately, especially with his injury problems. So it was quite nice to see him get on the score sheet. And he will have been worried for his position given Bakayoko's form there. I did quite like that Bakayoko was on Twitter celebrating Biglia's goal. It's quite nice. Bakayoko just strikes. He's a really nice guy. But that was all good. And there was a bit of controversy about Christoph Piontek's goal. I don't know if you saw this one. There was the high, wild foot beforehand. Personally, I think everything's all right there.
It goes into that category of you've seen them given. And oddly enough, you would probably say that you often see them given in that scenario where it isn't a defender doing it and they'd be penalised with a penalty. But if an attacker attempts to have an overhead kick and it's anywhere near... even say the defender's chest, then it usually gets penalised. And with VAR now almost increasing the amount of times where those sort of things get looked at, I was kind of expecting them to rule it out. But no, he took it well when it came back to him.
Yeah, obviously I'm not a supporter of Milan, but I was happy to see that given from a football perspective because... as a forward player myself, Kev, decisions like that going against strikers always drive me mad. So it was nice to see it stand. And Piontek's just, he can do no wrong in my eyes at the moment, to be fair. We'll talk about Inter then first before we move on to the derby. They finally won again. They beat Spal 2-0. And I guess the main story here is Lautaro Martinez. He was very impressive.
Yeah, he looked really sharp. He was unfortunate to have that goal chalked off, even though, you know, if it struck again, probably the opposite to Piontek. They're ones that, because you're not penalising a defender, you know, it's easier to penalise the attacker for a slight brush of the arm. Somebody needed to step up in Icardi's absence, and Martinez has really done that in the last few weeks. You know, he scored some, I was going to say, vital goals. But he sort of chipped in with a few while they've been going through this sort of rough patch. I don't think it's going to fully convince the Inter owners that he's going to be a direct replacement for Icardi decide to cash in. But it's at least positive that the whole team aren't, you know, looking to use Icardi's absence as kind of an excuse for this downturn in form.
Yeah, well, it's strange because... sorry, I'm just distracted. Someone's just lost their minds in the comments a little bit. We just had four comments from the same guy. Kaká, Ronaldo, Cafu, Maradona. It's like a game of word association. Someone says Italian football and he just shouts out these things. But
okay. Yeah, okay. I'm not making the link.
No, me neither. Me neither, because we're talking about Inter. Cafu never played for... Maradona never played for either of the Milan clubs. But anyway... Lautaro isn't going to be a replacement for Icardi, is he? They're completely different players. They complement each other quite well, but I don't know. The Inter squad, some of the players are obviously quite happy with what's happening with the Icardi situation. Perisic and Brozovic are two, because obviously there's the the well-known dispute between those two Croatian boys and Icardi, they don't like each other, and they seem quite happy about the fact that he's not in the team anymore. But you do think, I know we spoke about it recently, and they do probably just need to get rid of him, but they will miss his goals. And is there a way of replacing his goals?
Well, not without significant investment, or certainly invest in whatever they were able to recoup for him. You know, it's the Milan derby this weekend, and I was at the tie earlier this season in the San Siro, and it was dire, to be frank. And then it was that, it could have been 94th minute winner from Icardi, and that's what he does. He turns a point into three, or even, you know, no points into one. And the way Inter are sort of falling out of these Champions League spots at the moment, that's what you need for these last few weeks. And I said to you before coming online, could he make some sort of surprise appearance even from the bench? It doesn't look likely at the moment. He's training on his own. But I bet Spalletti would rather him be available than not at the moment.
You don't know with Spalletti, though, because he's such a stubborn character as well. But we've heard out here that Icardi won't play again for Inter unless he was given the captaincy again, which obviously isn't the way of going about getting back in the team, is it? But then you don't know, has that come from him or Wanda?
No, I've seen some of the stuff with Wanda as well, which are quite comical at times, particularly when Antonio Cassano has given her lessons on how to behave, or how to get her husband to behave.
I know, right? When Cassano comes out of a debate as being the source of reason, you know you're probably an absolute moron. And that is exactly what Wanda strikes you as every time she makes a public appearance. But who do you fancy this weekend?
I fancy Milan. I think, you know, it's... I don't think it's going to be a particularly stunning game again. Unless there's an early goal, really, that forces Inter to... I think Spalletti will play fairly cautiously. And it could just be one of those games where Milan grinds something out, and it's probably likely to be Piontek to score the goal. Maybe almost in a reverse of earlier in the season, it'll be a late strike.
I was just about to say that it's going to be an ugly game. And I think Spalletti is going to set up with one intention, and it's going to be to get out of there with a draw, because I just don't see how he's going to do anything else. He loves defending. He absolutely loves setting his teams up like that, and it's going to be the same. But I can just see something falling for Piontek, just something. But again, I wouldn't be at all surprised if Inter won it. It's one of those things. How Milan would it be to have this upwards trajectory to overtake Inter and then to play them in the derby when they're at their most vulnerable without their best player who's haunted you so many times, and to still lose? It's really, really hard to predict, but it's going to be probably a terrible match to watch, but the consequences of it will make it worth watching whatever happens.
Yeah, it's been quite nice in a way that Inter have fallen off so far and Milan have sort of pushed on to make this actually... It wasn't necessarily not a meaningful game before, but, you know, they're so close in the table now that they can flip around in the result of a Inter victory.
Yeah, well, the comments are popping in now. Aaron Holland says he's not sure why, but he thinks Inter will take it. Badger says for him, he usually picks the off-form team to win the derby, which I guess goes along with Aaron, and says Inter. And CM Fox says, one season wonder, Piontek. Mark my words. All right, CM Fox, we'll talk to you next season, then I guess I'm sure you'll remind us, because you always do. And we have another comment, which I think is probably going to prove true, which that a headed goal from a corner is inevitable, which it just seems it, doesn't it? It's got the Milan derby written all over it.
Oh, Piontek's quite good, isn't he?
Yeah, he is, and he's pretty good at absolutely everything you'd want them to be good at, to be fair. Let's go to Rome, shall we? We had Alistair McKenzie there. I'm not going to speak to him, but I'll speak to you, Kev. I think you're good enough. There's been a lot of change there. Monchi's gone. Di Francesco's gone. And dilly ding, dilly dong, Claudio Ranieri has arrived. Who saw that coming? Wow.
No, I was quite surprised by the Ranieri appointment. And actually, I don't really blame Di Francesco for a lot of the problems at Roma. I think last year, as much as they've got some good players, you have these seasons. You've seen plenty of teams, plenty of leagues over the years. You have that season where everything clicks. And you've got probably a couple of standout players. Sometimes you lose some of those standout players. And certainly Roma did in Nainggolan and Alisson. And then the season after is just almost an abject failure. You know, because the thing that made me question if it was Di Francesco was after the 7-1 defeat to Fiorentina in the Coppa Italia. I watched their next game in the league and the players were playing for him. You know, there was no lack of effort. And it's almost... I think Ranieri, after tonight's game, said that, you know, he was happy with the win, but performances had to be better. And I think that has been the problem with Roma this season. The players, to a man, aren't good enough to give a better performance as a team, if that makes sense. Mm. You know, they're playing almost at their level. And just too many of them are not good enough, be it the goalkeeper, you know, and some others out there.
There it is. I was wondering if you'd say it today. I thought we might get through a pod without big Robin Olsen getting a mention. People have started like tweeting me about him, and it's just not my thing. Direct your tweets to @rabbit on about Robin.
I saw a statistical piece. I think it was by 442 website on the. I think it was the 15 players that had dipped the most in form. And Olsen was on there alongside even Mo Salah, really. It was a little bit far-fetched how minute the numbers were that they were letting goals in. But he's conceded 22 since the turn of the year. And I think Roma have conceded the most goals. I think it's out of the top half of Serie A.
I'm just looking at the table now. There is one team in the top half who have conceded more than them, which is Atalanta. But that doesn't matter because Atalanta have scored more than anyone bar Juventus. That's just the way they play. But yeah, Roma have conceded 37 goals. You said Olsen has conceded 22 since the start of the year.
Yeah, that possibly didn't include tonight because I read it this morning.
But that is more than Juventus. It's more than Napoli. It's the same number as Inter have all season, which... it's just not good. It's really, really not good. But let's chat about Roma then, because people are popping up in the comments. People seem to get excited about Roma. I don't know why. I know Aaron Holland is a Roma fan, but the rest of them, you guys,
these Roma are in touching distance with Inter.
That's
another sort of thing you could label of why Di Francesco was doing okay with what he had.
This is what I don't really understand, because what are Roma's expectations? To qualify for the Champions League, right? Or to compete to qualify for the Champions League, especially when you consider that the players that they lost, and they're doing exactly that. They're only 3 points off. And Inter could go on to lose 3 games in their next 5. So I really don't get the logic in it.
They're unfortunate that they had the second leg against Porto after the Rome derby, because it was huge disappointment from a fan's perspective, and then another huge disappointment on top of that.
Yeah.
I think if he hadn't had that game midweek, he probably would have been in post tonight.
You think?
We've got this separated last 16 of the Champions League where Juve played Tuesday. If that had been Roma playing this Tuesday, I think Di Francesco would have still been in a job.
It is a tricky one. Even the way they got knocked out of the Champions League, it's hard to blame Di Francesco for that, because they were set to go to penalties and Alessandro Florenzi had a momentary lapse of concentration and did what he did. But
well, I think it was instinctive. I mean, it was instinctive, but VAR was there to now sort of get that out of the game, if you like.
Yeah, true, true, true. Aaron Holland says that all he wants for the rest of the season is for Ranieri to keep Kluivert and Schick on the pitch and to just give them the ball. and I completely support that. Schick obviously scored. I was so happy to see Patrick Schick score in his first game under Claudio Ranieri, because this is the time for him now, right? He's got a new coach. It's a new start for him in Rome. We know what he's capable of doing, and now he has the chance to do it.
But how long has he got a new coach for? Because I didn't see how long Ranieri's been contracted to them for. Not that that makes any difference.
You've put me on the spot there, but yeah, it doesn't make any difference.
Because I assumed it was a short-term appointment. I didn't really look at any detail into it, but
I'm going to look that up. But
you know, you think to yourself, if it isn't beyond the summer, then Schick's got a huge question to ask himself. Does he go and look for more playing time elsewhere, or does he chance his arm in getting in favour with whoever comes in after Ranieri?
Wait, it's a 3-month contract, but
yeah.
Ranieri did actually say when he came in that he didn't discuss anything. He didn't discuss the length or the...
Oh, no, he didn't discuss money. Of course he didn't. That's why he might have left that to his agent.
Yeah, but Ranieri probably isn't the man for them long term. Even if he does do a good job between now and the end of the season, they shouldn't give him the job on a permanent basis. Because as much as I adore that man, and I really, really love him, I think his time is behind him.
You've got to appreciate his appetite.
Oh,
the way he's been kicked around by like clubs over the years. Wasn't treated anywhere near as well as he should have been at Leicester. I remember Valencia. I think he got the short end of the stick.
Mm. Even back as far as a Chelsea, he was kind of screwed over a little bit.
Yeah, they didn't really value that sort of second place finish he got him in his final year there.
No, and this is why. Has the whole world of football ever been so happy for one man in particular as it was when Claudio Ranieri was pictured beside Bocelli as he sang and Leicester were Premier League champions? It was just incredible. It was really incredible. But yeah, he's probably not. But where do they go? What happens? Because they backed the whole Monchi project. That's gone terribly. And I thought when Monchi left, that would have given Di Francesco a pass because he was working with the players that were brought in for him. And then to acknowledge that the guy who brought in the players wasn't doing his job well enough, to then sack the guy for not doing enough work with the players that were brought in by the wrong person, it seemed really, really strange.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, I don't know where they go, really. Maybe when Spalletti leaves Inter, they just get him back for another term.
No, they don't deserve that. Roma need to play better football. They've got the players to play really, really good football. And Spalletti's not going to do that with them. They need to get Zeman back. Then they'll be supported.
No. There is a bit of a... Well, I think in every league, there's a bit of this merry-go-round of coaches. But in the last few years, what Roma tried Rudy Garcia, who'd obviously excelled elsewhere. And then obviously that didn't work out. So it looked as though they went up and coming coach from Serie A and went Di Francesco. Now they've gone back to an aging short-term appointment. They've got to work out what they want, really.
Yeah, if you look at Serie A now, I guess the coaches there who suit the style that Roma's players would work well with are Giampiero Gasperini, who, to be honest, I can't see leaving Atalanta for Roma.
No.
Marco Giampaolo, maybe. And Roberto De Zerbi at Sassuolo. The two of those are probably the options if they want to take someone with Serie A experience, because after that, there's not really much, is there?
Part of me, when Di Francesco went, thought that they might try and do a Madrid or whatever you want to call it and try and pull Totti down. I don't know if he's got any coaching badges. I'm not even sure if he's got any inclination to go into coaching. But it's just that, you know, that's almost it, isn't it? You've done foreign coach that excelled elsewhere. You've got ex-Roma, local Italian coach, aging coach, and then you go ex-superstar.
Yeah, it is. If Ancelotti wasn't at Napoli, you could see him going there because he spent time there as a player and that. But yeah, I don't know. I don't think Francesco Totti wants to go into coaching. They should just give it to...
Would they go for Sarri if Chelsea let him go?
This is it. And people keep talking about this as if Sarri already has no job. But he had that spell last week where people said he has 3 games to save his job. If he loses one of them, he's gone. He lost the City in the Cup and he didn't go. And then they beat Spurs. And I don't know. I just think, and I'm definitely going to sound stupid here, but for once it seems like Chelsea are going to stick with someone.
I think this summer you could see a clearing out of the players that have previously, I was going to say, caused grief for the coach, but the ones that effectively start the player mutiny. You know, there's a lot of player power at Chelsea, and I think whoever it is running the club, because Abramovich isn't, you know, in the country at the moment, they could actually, not force, but realise that they've got to get those players out really now and start almost afresh with another generation of players that Sarri could effectively mould.
I guess it's also dependent on the if the transfer ban is upheld. If that's upheld, it probably makes more sense to keep him because he can work with these players. But then if it's not upheld, they can sign the players that he wants. So
if they drop out of the Champions League for a second successive season, though, they're going to have to get some money off their wage bill. And they've got 40-plus players on loan. So they're at good clubs. They're not bad players.
Yeah, but are they... Chelsea don't care, do they? They'd rather move them on than play them. But I don't know. Mm-hmm. I really. It looks like Zidane's back at Madrid now. So Hazard will be off there, probably.
But yeah, I haven't thought about that, actually.
We've got Vito in the comments. Vito, hello. It's nice to see your voice. We called it, Kev. We knew
Vito's doing hashtag sorry for Roma. just so Marco Giampaolo doesn't go there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Vito says he blames Monchi more than Di Francesco, kind of echoing what we've said, really. And that Olsen, Marcano, Pastore and George have been flops, which is true. And then Vito's just having the bants with people in the comments. Even when he's not here, it's good to see. I hope you're having a fantastic weekend away, Vito, by the way. We miss you on here. Kev, what are we talking about next? Because
what are we next?
We'll go to... let's do Sampdoria Atalanta to welcome Vito to the comments.
Oh, yes.
This was one of the most confusing games I've ever seen in my life, because Sampdoria were playing at home in what effectively looked like Atalanta's away kit, and Atalanta were playing away in what looked exactly like Sampdoria's home kit. I didn't like this.
No, you're going to get another middle-aged grumble from me. if 37 is middle-aged. But yeah, no, I watched, because I only saw this in the highlights. So I watched the highlights, and the first couple of sort of pieces of action, I thought it was Sampdoria attacking. Because like you say, although it was Atlanta's traditional black and blue stripes, they're in white shorts, they're in white socks. It just frustrates me. Everything's a bit going back to Juve's video. Everything's a bit of a PR campaign and all this. And it's just playing your strips.
I think you're being a bit too negative about this. Because while I agree, it looked ridiculous, the shirt was nice and it was a nice gesture.
They're often nice shirts, and it's often a nice gesture, but it's done so much.
Yeah.
You know, they should possibly allow them, well, this might be the only time Sampdoria have done it, but let's allow them to do it when it's a proper anniversary. Not it's like the 19th, you know, the 19th year of something. You know, you do see it. There was earlier in the season, I saw Spal play at home in a sort of a dark bluey green kit.
Oh, it was lovely.
It was a beautiful kit. I have no idea still to this day what they were wearing it for.
No, I can't remember that either, but it was really nice, wasn't it? Oh, that's annoying me now. Vito, go look up what that Spal kit was for while you're watching
it. Yeah. We never got to it on the pod that week. But again, I think it was something, yeah, anyway. Yeah, I don't know. It's one of those things. We're stuck with it, I think.
Yeah, I was watching this game on my phone while first moving quite quickly to get from the Dallara to the train station so I could get to the Mapé. And I was so confused watching it because I was like looking up and looking down a lot. And every time I looked down, I just kept forgetting who was wearing what. So I was nearly celebrating the Quagliarella's penalty at one point. It was just bizarre. But can we give Robin Gosens some credit for that goal? Because, oh my God, I don't know how he did it. He was like flying through the air and he put it in from a ridiculous angle.
I don't think he meant it.
Oh, come on.
No, he was trying to put that across the box.
No.
That wasn't an attempt at a shot. I thought you were about to give Quagliarella some credit for hitting 20 goals in the season for the first time.
But Robin Gosens is incredible.
I think he was doing what every good professional should do and putting it low across the box as close to the goal as he could.
Yeah, and it went really close to the goal. So it was actually
It went in. Yeah, no, he was putting it in the right area.
Yeah, and it went in the
exact He wasn't striking. It was an excellent piece of technique to get the ball back across and into the goal.
On the other end.
Sorry to shoot you down there.
Zapata's goal was funny. That was like, I don't know if you play FIFA, but on last year's FIFA, the penalties were really weird. So the easiest way to take a penalty was to just kick it as soft as you possibly could. So it like trickles in and the goalkeeper dives over. And that's effectively what happened here.
Yeah, it certainly trickled in.
It was really fantastic. And there was a great picture of Odero because Odero realizes there's nothing he can do, but he has time to get back up and moan while the ball's still trickling towards the goal. It was just so, so good. But Gian-Pierre Gasperini got sent off and he did a funny because he got sent off because Samp were given a penalty that, I don't know about you, this was not a penalty. Gomez took the ball down and who was it? Was it Gabbiadini that got in between him and the ball? Gaston, I think, got between him and the ball. So
Gomez had to
run into him and Gaston went down. I don't see how this can be a penalty.
I think I was going to say the seeing him given again. I think what doesn't help Gomez is he's so small.
Yeah, so he has to like kind of jump.
Yeah, because it makes him, you know, because I think he's partially trying to jump out the way, partially trying to sort of let you just naturally let the player know you're there, so they're not going to get injured if anything.
But this one, right?
And it just made it look really bad
because Gomez controls it. If Gomez falls down, surely it's obstruction from Gaston and it's a free out. Because Ramirez put himself directly in between Gomez and the ball after the first touch. So I really don't understand it. And Gasp was fuming. And you saw, I love when he gets angry. He's amazing value when he gets angry. He's quite an underrated madman. And he walked across the pitch and the Samp fans, obviously with him being ex-Genoa, were giving him stick. And then one of the club delegates at Samp was standing in the tunnel.
Yeah.
And Gasp just gave him a push. It was really funny. It's one that you can't not find this amusing.
It was funny because you also saw that plastic sort of tunnel thing shake as well. As you know, the only way it would have been better if the Sampdoria official had fallen through.
Yeah,
the sort of plastic sort
if
of
it was made of tunnel. Like crepe paper, and he just fell straight out the other side. Oh, But I enjoyed it so much. I've watched a lot of videos of Gasly on the push so many times. It's such an undignified fall as well, because obviously the guy he pushes is, like, he's not a young man, right? So,
but he's also not expecting it either, because I don't know if he was putting his hand out to, I don't know, to say, never mind. But
condolences. It's hard to know what was being said. But that's a huge win for Atalanta, and what's a tricky place to go. So now them and Torino are level in 6th and 7th on 44 points apiece, 3 points off Roma and 6 off Inter, which isn't impossible, but it is unlikely, you would say. But who knows? The way things are in Serie A this season, aside from Juventus, anything seems like it could happen. Right, next up, what have we got? Let's talk about Parma. I was at the Parma game. They beat Genoa 1-0, so Vito can be cheered up with this. And I think they deserved it. Juraj Kuchka got the goal. And it was, again, scrappy. A little bit of comedy in this.
It was a little comical, yeah. It was, who was it who tries to kick the ball and just air kicks, and then did it strike the post or the...
It was Luca Rigoni, just ran into the ball, didn't he? And, fumbled it off the post with possibly his hand, which is why the thing went to VAR. But it was very funny. I was happy for Kuchka, actually, because I spent a bit of time with him in the week, and he's a bloody nice guy, you know? So it was good to see him get on the score sheet against his former club, and of course he didn't celebrate. But I was... we have to talk about Bruno Alves again. He's so good. It's unbelievable how good he is. Everything that goes near the box, he just eats it. And the only two times Genoa had any joy from putting the ball in the box were because they had Sanabria peel away from Alves, and the balls were just played miles away from him. So the idea then was to hit it into the box, but as far away from Alves as possible, and then knock it back and hope for we win the second ball. And they had a couple of chances from that. But Alves is absolutely phenomenal.
I think that's where you realise how good those players are, when they can play at that level into their mid to late 30s and still be performing. I know you don't necessarily have to, have a pace like a winger does as your years decline as a defender. But just to still be operating at that level, you realise how good they are positionally. Honestly,
the level of performance and consistency of Bruno Alves this season, I'd go as far as to say he's the best defender in Italy this season. And by extension, one of the best performing defenders in Europe. I know Romagnoli at Milan, fantastic. Musacchio as well. But Bruno Alves is just... And when you take into consideration the team he has around him, it's not that strong. And the extra responsibility he has because he's got Luis Giuseppe playing behind him, he's just been so, so good. And I tweeted quite late on Saturday night that I just couldn't stop thinking about Bruno Alves and how good he was. Just all I can think about now, it's just him.
I was quite surprised because I think when we spoke before the pod, you said Parma finally won. So I looked it up, and it was their first win since the 19th of January.
Yeah, they've not been very good, especially at home.
You say they've not been very good, but the results haven't been very good, but they've had some good performances in there. The 3-3 with Juve must have been within that time period.
Yeah, but again, that was just Gervinho. Gervinho just produced a couple of moments and that was it.
I think we forget that they're newly promoted to be sitting 11th.
I'm not holding it against them. They've had a good season, and they did start the season very, very well. And their CEO was talking to everyone around here, and I mentioned to him about them getting the Europa League, and he was like, you're crazy. We're not thinking about that. But then he went on to say that everyone keeps talking about the Europa League. So he was trying to keep everyone's expectations down, and I think he's done a good job, because Parma, they're fine. They'll finish mid-table this season and then they can build next, and that's exactly what they will have wanted this term.
I find it strange that people seem to be, maybe it's a bit strong, anti-Parma, within Italy, because I mean, lots of people see them as a big club because what they did in the late 90s, early millennium, and that's really their only really real sort of period of sort of winning trophies. So they're like a big club, but they're not, you know, other people in Italy maybe say, oh, they're not really a big club.
I think the reason a lot of people within Italy don't like them is nothing to do with the football club. It's more to do with the Parmigiani themselves, because they're quite disliked around Italy. They have a reputation for being quite arrogant and quite cold and distant from everyone else. They look down their nose at people. That's the stereotype. I'm not saying it's true, but a lot of people, if you say that you live in Parma, are like, huh, what's that like? As if to be. So yeah, that's just the way Italian culture is, right? Everyone hates people from different regions, and that's just how it goes. But okay, where are we now? All right, my last game that I was at then was Bologna-Cagliari, and Cagliari didn't do much, but Bologna were really, really good, and they're going to stay up now. They've got every chance of staying up. If you look at the squad, they brought in Roberto Soriano and Nicolò Sansone in the winter. And these are players who can really, really play. They're now 1 point off safety. And Empoli and Spal must be really looking over their shoulders.
Yeah, those two signings really gave me confidence that they would stay up. And I'm in Bologna in April, so I'm quite intrigued to see how they play on that day. But they've still got to play Empoli. Empoli have got some difficult games. I was looking at their running before coming on. I didn't look at Spal, although they can easily be dragged into it. And you, I don't know. I think Mihailovic is going to do it and get them on a little run.
I think he will too. I was shocked when Sansone went there, coming back from Spain. And then Soriano going there was strange too. And I didn't think they'd do anything. But when Inzaghi got the boot, then I thought, okay, they've hope now. Because I'm not exaggerating to say Bologna, when I've seen them this season before this weekend, they had been the worst team I've ever seen in my life. And they just sucked the joy out of everything. And bear in mind, I've been supporting a League of Ireland team since I was able to walk. So I've watched some absolute dross. But Bologna's football this season is the worst I've seen. But the other day it was good. They were actually allowed to attack. And the big man Federico Santander went off. And surprise, surprise, they looked all the better for it. But I did actually speak to a Bologna-based TV journalist, Alessio De Giuseppe, and he kind of explained that they know Santander's not very good. He represents like a fight and a willingness to go to war that their players never had before. So they like him for that more than his football ability, because they're painfully aware that he hasn't got that much and he's not that good at scoring goals, which I thought was quite nice. Quite nice to have my opinions backed up by someone who watches them every week. But yeah, they're allowed to play football now, so I do think they'll be fine. I really do.
I think this week will be quite interesting because Empoli have got Frosinone away. I think it's away. Anyway, they've definitely got Frosinone. And they played really well against Torino for the first half this week. And I think if Empoli were to lose that, or even maybe not get 3 points, that could be a massive sort of blow to their hopes of staying up and just to their morale. And I think, who did Bologna have?
Bologna have Torino.
Bologna
have
got Torino. So if they can get a point there and Empoli lose to Frosinone or drop points, I think it's just momentum then that could take Empoli down.
It's the week after that, right? Bologna are at home to Sassuolo. They'll win that.
And Empoli got Juve.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, I thought that happened. Yeah.
And this is what Alessio was saying the other day. I might insert the audio in, actually, just for the sake of the audio listeners. Bologna's next few fixtures on paper are a lot easier than Empoli's, because after Empoli play Juve, they play Napoli. And then they play Udinese away, who are right down in there as well. And then they've got Atalanta away. So
I think a lot can be said for that momentum, or vice versa, if you're in free fall. And you just can't get, you know, what we've got, 11 games left?
Yeah.
Still a lot of points to play for, but once you fall behind, it can be quite difficult.
Kev, if you're in Bologna on the end of April, that's when Bologna play Empoli.
Oh, no, I'm there the week before, the Easter week. Bologna have got Sampdoria.
Okay. That's unfortunate, because that would have been a cracking game to go to.
Hopefully Sampdoria wearing their proper shirts.
It would have saved me a trip to Bologna, Kev. You could have done that one for me.
Yeah, not there still, I'm afraid.
All right. Good afternoon and welcome to the Stadio Renato Dall'Ara here in Bologna. Connor Clancy reporting as ever for Forza Italian Football. And I'm joined this week by Alessio De Giuseppe, a local journalist here. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks to you.
So, Bologna picked up a crucially important 3 points here. Puts them now within 1 point of safety. Can they stay up?
Well, today it's a sigh of relief. Bologna can't win a match here at Dall'Ara since September. So now it's just 1 point to Empoli. And it's really important because the atmosphere before the match was very worried, because relegation here is not considered a way to interpret for the next time.
Well, this is a huge club, and we saw some of the banners in the Curva were turned upside down to show the displeasure, as we've seen.
Yes, because they are not so happy that what management has done since today. Not for the owner. Maybe they said that the owner, Jerry Saputo from Canada, is not too present here to follow all the problems that have this team. But the management should do more, spend more for the team, because they think that this city deserve a better team.
Well, they did bring in Roberto Soriano and Nicola Sansone in January, and Mihailovic came in as well, and things look a little bit better now.
Yeah, sure. We don't think that probably Mihailovic can change so completely this team, but his job was very good, and we see also today an offensive team, not so defense as the Inzaghi's team before. Soriano and Sansone bring a lot of quality technically to this team that probably I think is one of the poorest team about technically in all Serie A.
Well, Federico Santander went off injured in the first half, and regular readers of the website and listeners to our podcast will know that I do not think he is a good footballer at all. And I thought Bologna were actually, they started well, but when he went off, they were a bit better. Palacio went up front. They were a little bit more fluid.
Yeah.
Things were moving a little bit better. You watch Bologna every week, so tell me why I'm wrong and why Santander is a good player.
Well, I think here in Bologna last year, we are used to watch not so good striker. But Federico Santander has something different about, in Spanish people said garra, about, I don't know, how can you say
it? It sounds like a fight.
Yeah, almost, fight, right? Fight. He fight every time. He's not so so good, close to the door. But here we need also this type of footballer. But I think, as I said before, technically we need more players as Rodrigo Palacio. That one exit today, and he deserved a standing ovation.
Even
for
people
him.
In the press box here were
standing up for him. Because he's a beautiful legend of football. He played the World Cup final with Argentina against Germany. So for us, he's a proud to have him here. And a curiosity, he never scored here at home since he started the adventure to Bologna. He scored about 10 goals, every goal scored away.
So, it's crazy.
Yeah, a lot of chances also today. But
he had that big chance at the end today. He will be lucky that it wasn't important in the end.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
he will be very thankful for that. But before we finish, do you think Bologna will stay in Serie A?
I think, yeah, because next match is... are on the, in Italy we said sulla carta, on the paper, are easier than, for example, I don't know, Udinese or Empoli, that will meet big clubs. We will fight against Empoli here, and other little team, and probably the Lara Stadium, where Bologna this year win just three times. It could be an important way to get the surviving.
Yeah, well, the fans are always excellent. Yeah. It's cliche to say, but those fans do deserve a win like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, absolutely.
They have been excellent every time I've seen
and,
them.
And we are waiting for the new stadium when the stands will be closed to the court. And probably in Italy we have this problem that stands are a bit far from the court. Yeah.
Okay, Alec, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Congratulations on the win as well. And it was good to see you again.
We've missed Lazio Fiorentina.
Oh, we have. We have. Vieri was there and he did some good work. But, right, let's touch on it quickly. We also missed Frosinone Torino a bit.
Well, I spoke about them a second ago.
Briefly. You mentioned their name. That's good enough. Right, Lazio Torino.
Lazio, Lazio dropped points. As far as I'm concerned, Lazio dropped points. I watched the whole game back this afternoon when I got home from work because I didn't manage to catch it live. But Lazio should have seen that game off first half. Probably Ciro Immobile himself should have seen the game off. Fiorentina's midfield were woeful. You know, Lazio just controlled the flow of play first half. And I just can't believe they came away with a point, Fiorentina.
Immobile missed that big chance where it was a bloody good save, to be fair, and it hit the post. But he should have done a lot better with it, especially after scoring. You would have thought he would have had the confidence to finish that. I just thought maybe the Fiorentina's defence for that was a mess. There was no shape to their back line. So maybe he just assumed he was offside. Because I did when I saw it at first. I was like, there's no way he can be there and not be offside. But the big thing to come out of this was that Federico Chiesa went off injured and he was crying on the bench. I'm not sure the extent of the injury, but it seems to be a muscular one.
Yeah, there was no reports when we came on. I still hadn't managed to dig anything out. I don't know if he'd had tests today, or if they're maybe keeping it quiet just for the moment.
Yeah, but that would be a big, big loss for them if he's out for the season, especially with them being still in the Coppa Italia quarter or semi-finals with the second leg at Atalanta to come.
Well, they've got nobody else really driving the team forward. Muriel scoring goals, but Chiesa really picks the team up as well as the ball and drives them forward.
He carries them at times.
Yeah, he does, and it'll be a huge loss, but then maybe they need to prepare for that in the summer.
Yeah, he's probably going to be off, isn't he? But I don't know. Aaron Holland says mandatory mention of the legend Mattia Destro because he has the strangest and most inexplicable love for that striker. I don't quite understand. I know the Roma link, but I don't get why you love him so much, Aaron. But Kev, we've made it through the two-man show. It was quite nice. Thanks for coming on and saving me from being alone.
It's all right.
I hope it was as enjoyable for you as it was for me.
Of course.
But
I always
anyway,
get asked that late at night.
You'll be sleeping on the couch tonight. All right. Guys, head over to ForzaItalianFootball.com for all of your latest Serie A news, your match reports, your hashtag FIF at the games, videos from the stadiums, speaking to people who are also at the games. We've been doing everything. And yeah, this weekend was a good weekend for us. It was one of those weekends where I loved the website a little bit more, being at 8 of the 10 games. It was fantastic. And as tired as I am now after the weekend of being at 3 games, it's definitely worth it. Binger is just so, so good. So, so good. And then you get to eat some nice pasta every other day. So life's not bad out here. But that's all there is for me to say. I'm rambling now. Kev, you can say goodbye to everyone for us this week.
Ciao, ciao, everyone.
Beautiful.
See you next week.
Beautiful.
Scettici, seduti sui gradoni, mentre mentre sfilano ragazze di illusioni. Che se poi esiste la felicità, chi ti dice che non passi anche di qua? Tu sei grande Bologna, tu sei forte Bologna, così bella Bologna, bella davvero. Amerò la Bologna, le tue ali Bologna, le mie gambe Bologna, sto correndo con te. Guarda il cielo come blu, col rosso fuoco dell'amore. Dai, vestiti così, sei bella più di un fiore. Staremo in curva, abbracciati a un'idea. E sarà come sentire la marea.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.